I don't forget.
I still remember. I won't forget it.
And I keep fighting.
I'm still fighting for, I guess, freeing the occupied side.
Polymnia and Sonia Nicolau, my sisters, and just like me, natives of the free part of Cyprus.
I remember being in elementary school in Cyprus, and on every notebook and every book published by the Cypriot government, there was this phrase, and that was in reference to the northern side, which is just, it's again, like you might not be talking about it all the time or thinking about it all the time, but it's still there. It's something that that keeps coming up in one way or another. And on top of that little logo, there were also pictures from the northern side on the front of the notebook, just getting or something like that. There would be a picture of a really pretty place on the northern part of the island. Yeah, I got goosebumps saying that.
This is 1974, a podcast on the Turkish invasion of Cyprus. For those that don't know where Cyprus is one of the largest islands in the Mediterranean. It's about a half an hour plane ride south from Turkey and about a 45-minute plane ride from Greece. But the majority of the population identifies as Greek. In July of 1974, the Greek military government orchestrated a coup against the Cypriot government. And when the Cypriot government fell, the country was left unprotected, without a leader, and very vulnerable. While the country was a mess, the Turks found their chance. They invaded under the excuse that they were concerned for the safety of Turkish Cypriots. But such concerns were unreasonable since violence between Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots had not broken out in years. The island was divided into two sections, north and south, occupied and free.
There were probably times before where if they had invaded or whatever, could have been justified. But at that given time, it was an excuse. Basically, what had happened is they had this coup. The coup actually was successful, right? So there was still a big hoopla around things, right? But there were no attacks against Turkish Cypriots during that time. There was no real reason.
That's my dad, Christos Nicolaou. His family became refugees because of this invasion, so he's definitely a lot more passionate and knowledgeable on the subject.
There are lots of classified documents around what happened at that time exactly.
Like right? In the US or in Turkey?
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. When I was saying that this was a sweet moment for the Turks, it was really a sweet moment. What happened is there was no real strong government in the US, right? It was Watergate. Nixon was just ousted, right? Greece was just coming out of a coup. Actually, it was still a junta when the invasion took place. There was also a coup in Cyprus. So it was a complete mess, both in Greece and in the US. One night, I walked up, but our house was a two-story house. So at the top floor, we had a veranda, and my grandfather was sitting there on his own with a hunting gun. And I went up there, and I asked him, "Hey, what are you doing here?" And he was like guarding the house. And I could hear planes, roaring in the skies, and explosions far away. The problem was the planes. Basically, the island National Guard had no air force, no way to defend itself against airplanes. So they were basically cruising around and bombing any target. People were really, really terrified of planes. So soon after the invasion started, and as the enemy forces, Turkish forces were approaching, people left their homes and went into the forest for hiding.
My dad, my grandmother, and my uncle were some of the people that had to take refuge in these forests. My dad was only 4 years old at the time, and my uncle only 3 months old.
I guess my mom was afraid that he would die, and according to our faith, no one should die without being baptized. So even though my father was absent, I mean, all the male population of the family was absent actually, they were fighting, they went ahead and baptized him, and actually the godfather was an uncle of mine that was wounded in the war. So he was sent back. It was a very surreal baptism in the middle of a forest in a very small church. No nice dresses, not many guests. A wounded soldier in his uniform on crutches, and a bunch of kids, my mom and aunt. One day reality hit hard, right? I mean, like four older, grandpas or grandmas or whatever, I'm not so sure. They did the usual stroll to the village, but they didn't realize that the village had already been captured. So they were shot. They were never found. Now, what happened after that? The village was taken. The community pretty much knew that it was very close to the front line, so they retreated. I remember we spent a few nights at a friend's house at another village, and then retreated further up near the peak of the mountain, stayed there, and gradually found ourselves, going over the mountain to the south coast of the island, where we stayed there until the war was over, and my father came back from the army a few months later.
Even though the war was over in less than a month, refugees still had to deal with the housing crisis that resulted from the south side's population nearly doubling in size. Since most people didn't believe that the situation was permanent, they resorted to living in tents. And this lasted for almost 3 years until new housing was available.
I was very young, so my memories are limited. But I do remember how every other Sunday we would drive to my father's village, which was at the mountains, Vuni. And the newly allocated place for the refugees was there. And people were still living in tents. And I remember probably was maybe 2 years after the war. So people were still living in tents in a refugee camp that was on our way there. And it was always sad driving through there. I don't know why. It just brought the sadness, like seeing these people, and even at the young age of 7 or 6 years old, like thinking that they don't have a house anymore and they have to live in a tent, and it was winter and it was raining.
My mom, Artemis Nicolau. Although her family was not from the north side, and so they were not directly affected, the shock of the invasion was still felt throughout the nation.
You would be waking up at the sirens, screams that they decided that that was the way they would have people remember that. So they would have the sirens play, and then you would wake up to that sound thinking, what happened that day. And you would have pictures in your mind of what happened from maybe photographs that you've seen of places that have been bombed, or like Turkish soldiers pointing guns to other Cypriots that they lived in the now occupied territories. So it always like brought scenes of horror. And when I was younger, I used to think, oh, what if it's like this time it's happening again? What we would do? What do we need to do? Is this, what if it's the real thing again happening? Because I mean, they are so close. When you live in Cyprus, it's like a few miles or a short airplane ride from Turkey, and the danger, I guess, it's always there in our minds, at least it's always there, that they might decide again that the island belongs to them and they need to take it, and what will happen to the Greek-speaking population of the island.
The sirens go off twice a year, once on July 15th to mark the coup, and once on July 20th to mark the invasion. Every year that the island remains divided, the sirens play, and it's been 44 years. Like my mom, most people have siren stories of their own. When I was little, I believed the Turks were coming to take the rest of us. In those days between the first and second sirens, I couldn't sleep because a Turkish soldier was under my bed, just waiting until I fell asleep so he could come out and get me.
It's just another reminder, something that keeps that memory and that fact engraved in your mind, kind of. It just keeps you aware because it comes back every year on the anniversary, and it kind of takes a toll on you. It's like, what time are they at? Like 6 a.m. in the morning? You're woken up by sirens. I used to think when I was little that, well, I do still think this, that the sirens sound like a woman like crying for help. And I had this picture in my mind too, and this whole thing, and I was absolutely terrified by them. But I do remember this one time. I was actually kind of older. I was probably in towards the end of elementary school. That's how far it went. And my mom had visited Turkey for I think it was a job related visit or something like that. And she brought back this traditional Turkish hat, one of the round ones with the little what is it called, the black hanging thing on the top. And it was a Turkish hat, and I had it up on one of my shelves across the room from my bed as a decoration. And the sirens went off, and I just wake up and see that, and I was like, oh my gosh, they're gonna come to get me. I'm a traitor. I have a Turkish hat as a decoration in my room, and I felt like a traitor. This is like 10, 11 year old me feeling that I betrayed my country by having a Turkish decoration up, and just, it was, that feeling was insane.
But you thought the Greek Cypriots were gonna come to get you.
Yes, which is terrifying and nonsense, but it was just, I just felt so guilty for having that. That's what, I didn't necessarily think they were coming to get me, but I felt so guilty, and I felt like I betrayed my grandpa who fought in the war. I felt like I betrayed everyone else that is a Greek because I had that up, and those sirens reminded me of that.
When the battles were over, a buffer zone was put in place to keep free from occupied, each on their respective sides. The buffer zone was opened in 2003 to allow visitors from the south side.
I didn't become fully aware of everything until they opened the borders and we could go visit. But in order to go visit, we had to give them our passports. And it was like you're entering a different country. And that felt really strange to me because we're supposed to go visit our homes, and we had to give them our passports, and they had to do a like security check. And that's where I saw my dad tear up for the first time in his life. I'd never seen my dad tear up, but it was the first time he visited his house, his childhood home. And I still remember that, and I don't think I'll ever forget that. That's when I guess it just woke me up, and I was like, this is wrong. Something needs to change.
The first time we went there was really, really weird. I was just looking at the house, not sure what to do next. There it was, right? But other people were living in it, and they've been living in it for 4 years. The Turkish Cypriot living there actually invited us in, brewed coffee, kept asking about the teacher that used to live in this house, who I know is, you know, he's my father. Why isn't he coming to see the house? Right? It's his house. And I was like, okay, it's his house. You've been living in it for 40 years. He cannot claim it back, right? He can visit it, but yeah, I mean, kind of weird situation. But, you know, leaving from there, he gave us peaches and oranges to take back to my mom and dad because those were the trees that they had planted many, many years ago.
I felt sad when I saw the house because I had a different picture of it on my mind. And I actually was the one that recognized it from a picture that they had. I guess my husband Christos couldn't really recognize it, or maybe didn't want to recognize it because he was expecting to see his grandmother's house next door, which no longer existed. They had tore it down. But then we saw some photos of the house, and I was pretty sure that was the house, even though there had been some minor alterations outside. I don't really find a reason to visit again. It's part of my country, but not really part now. So I don't know if it's going to be reunited. And so I guess it doesn't make any difference if I visit it or not for me. Because you're afraid of what might happen, because you're afraid, okay, I mean, they are our enemy, so what if they might change their mind and keep us all on the, close the buffer zone and say, oh, you crossed, now you cannot cross back. Now you're illegally here, and you need to go to Turkey to get on a trial, because that's really what they did when they invaded. You always have that in the back of your mind. It might be like nonsense, but you're worried when you're going there.
Now, I mean, it's been so long that you go on with your life day by day, and seldomly you have the luxury of remembering all those details. There are discussions, right? And there are all sorts of news or incidents, but typically you don't spend too much time thinking about them.
σπίτι που γεννήθηκα κι ας το πατούν οι ξένοι. Στοιχείο είναι και με προσκαλεί ψυχή και με προσμένει το σπίτι που...
This has been 1974, a podcast by me, Thea Nicolaou. For more audio like this, check out whje.com.
Και μόλα του τα νιά.